From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. State health officials say there's a lot of COVID-19 circulating in Alaska. Like the rest of the country, that's predominantly the Omicron BA5 subvariant. Hospitalizations in Alaska have been on a mostly upward trajectory since April, as have case counts. That's even with more people using at-home tests, the results of which aren't reported to the state. Still, state epidemiologist Dr. Joe McLaughlin says vaccinations are helping stave off infections and minimizing serious illness.
The hospitalization burden associated with this Omicron wave that we're experiencing, it's not as high as we've seen with the other variants.
McLaughlin says that's probably also due to more people with previous infections having already built up antibodies to COVID-19 and the development of antiviral treatments since the start of the pandemic. For those with a COVID infection, McLaughlin says it's important to begin those treatments quickly.
It's best to get started on those medications as soon as possible after you test positive. So if you woke up this morning feeling sick and you have a home antigen test, go ahead and test yourself. And if you test positive, go ahead and contact your healthcare provider.
A second vaccine booster shot is also still available in Alaska to anyone immunocompromised and those 50 and up. Cool, rainy weather that set in last week over much of Alaska has dampened this year's fire season, which was shaping up to be one of the worst in recorded history. And although state and federal agencies are sending some crews home, officials warn that the fires could come roaring back after a day or two of dry, warm weather. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Hot and dry weather earlier this summer created the perfect storm for wildfires that have burned nearly 3 million acres in Alaska this year, making it the sixth worst fire season on record. In response, agencies have mobilized 2,000 firefighters and equipment from around the state and outside, and they were about to raise the state's fire preparedness rating to its highest level.
We're at 4 now, 5 is the top. Last week and the week before, we were planning level 5.
State Forestry Division spokesperson Sam Harrell says all that changed over the past week or so after thunderstorms that had been spawning only dry lightning finally began to produce rain.
Tomorrow morning, Alaska will be dropping back to a preparedness level of 3.
In response to the change in weather, officials reduced the fire danger level in many areas and lifted the statewide emergency burn ban. And Harrell says some of the elite fire incident management teams brought up from the states are preparing to pack up and head home.
Fire season is picking up in the lower 48, and there is a demand for resources. And so once they're done with their assignment in Alaska, we are demobilizing them back to the lower 48 or back to Canada, depending on where they've come from.
That's what's happening with the Lime Complex, a series of 18 wildfires that have burned more than 865,000 acres in southwest Alaska. Harrell says forestry officials also hope to soon take over management of the 38,000-acre Minto Lakes fire northwest of Fairbanks. And he says management of the 61,000-acre Middle Tanana Complex fires burning between Salcha and Delta Junction also is downsizing.
The fires aren't growing anymore. And so the management team there has moved to a smaller group from a Type 2 incident management team to a Type 3.
The cool weather has slowed the 72,000-acre Clear Fire that's burning west of Anderson. And Harrell says officials there want to take the opportunity to limit the fire's growth.
They're still dealing with some active portions of line on that fire. And as crews are not needed on some of these other fires, we're rerouting them to Clear.
He says fire officials remain cautious because they know it's possible that hot and dry weather could return. He says that's happened in fire seasons past that look a lot like this one.
In our previous large acreage years, that's how those summers played out. We would have our typical lull this time of year, only to have it dry out in August and September.
Harrell says the fire season is only half over, and forestry will keep busy suppressing high-priority wildfires well into the fall. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
A new study shows that birders are an important part of tourism in Alaska, and as Claire Strempel reports for KTOO, they could be a boon for the economy, as well as conservation efforts, especially in rural and remote areas.
most of the birders who pull into Juneau's Rainforest Trail parking lot at 8 a.m. are locals. But Audubon Tour docent Brenda Wright sets some expectations for out-of-towners and newbies.
So this is a really hot spot for our red-breasted sapsucker here. You're going to see tons of trees.
You're kidding. That's why I'm here. I want to see that bird.
You haven't seen one yet?
Lynn Hartman is visiting Juneau from Minnesota. She came for the birds. Red-breasted sapsuckers, red-throated loons, Pacific wrens, and the Pacific slope flycatcher.
I'm now retired from the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, and birding is my passion.
Hartman is among the growing number of birders that come to Alaska each year. She and her partner, Mary Johnson, are in town for a week, staying at a bed and breakfast. They've been to the glacier a couple times in hopes of seeing Arctic terns. They took a whale-watching tour. They eat at restaurants. And Mary goes to the municipal pool every morning.
Yeah, we've been trying to take advantage of local culture. You know, we can't bird 12 hours a day.
Birders are the world's largest group of ecotourists. And according to a recent study, they're a real moneymaker in Alaska. And the state has only begun to cash in. They stay longer and spend more than non-birding visitors. One of the study's authors is Tobias Schwerer, a research professor at University of Alaska Fairbanks International Arctic Research Center.
All the people who said they watched birds, if we sum up their spending, you know, it was over $300 million in 2016, in 2016 dollars.
He says birders generate more than 3,000 jobs in the state. And they're coming because Alaska is home to the world's largest concentration of shorebirds. And it's a globally significant breeding ground for migratory birds.
We have these hot spots and they're still intact.
Alaska has the most important bird areas of any state. And yes, important bird area is an international metric overseen in the U.S. by the Audubon Society.
Well, Alaska is kind of the last little bit of wild where they can have a very intact ecosystem to support their populations.
That means opportunity statewide, but especially in rural places. Natalie Dawson, another author, says she got the idea for the study while guiding in remote parts of Alaska.
If I was in a community and there was a rare bird that had blown over from some other place in the circumpolar north, I would find people that had like traveled thousands of miles just to see like individual birds.
She said birders are motivated to get out where the birds are, even if it means departing from the beaten path. Places like the North Slope to see eider ducks or out west to the Pribilof Islands for seabirds. Far-flung destinations that draw birders intent on seeing rare species that can't be found elsewhere in the nation. But Dawson says the study showed more than half of the birders' money is spent in Southeast Alaska.
We believe that one of the draws to communities in Southeast Alaska is the fact that there are these birding festivals in a couple communities.
Things like the Hummingbird Festival in Ketchikan, the Bald Eagle Festival in Haines, and Cordova's Copper River Delta Shorebird Festival that has lured birders off the road system for decades. Dawson says there's more opportunities for small communities there. Back on the Rainforest Trail in Juneau, Lynn Hartman is standing in the trees listening to birdsong. No red-breasted sapsucker today, but she and Martha spotted a Pacific slope flycatcher.
And he was singing his song when I saw him, so his signature song.
And there's still time for that sapsucker. They're in town for a few more days. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strempel.
Anchorage Mayor Dave Bronson has vetoed an ordinance that gives the Anchorage Assembly a process for removing him, or any mayor, from office for a breach of public trust. The ordinance passed by the Assembly last week lays out a dozen offenses that would constitute a breach of public trust. That includes perjury, asking a municipal employee to break the law, and falsifying records. Ahead of its passing, Bronson, a staunch conservative, spoke out against the ordinance. He called it a partisan attack on him by the mostly progressive Assembly. Unalaska has unofficially kicked off its first cruise ship season since before the pandemic. The Roald Amundsen docked in Dutch Harbor on Monday with about 350 passengers aboard. Unalaska Visitors Bureau Executive Director Carlin Enlow says the cruise ship was a test to see how the rest of the season will go.
It feels like a big experiment after not having ships for the last 2.5 years.
Enlow says after years of cancellations, it's been a challenge to recruit volunteers and motivate local businesses to get involved in the port of call. Over 40 cruise ships canceled their visits to Dutch Harbor during the pandemic.
It's kind of like we're starting all over again with the cruise lines.
Before the pandemic, Unalaska was seeing a steady increase year-to-year in cruise ship tourism. In 2019, about 20 cruise ships docked in Dutch Harbor. 10 cruise ships are scheduled to come through Unalaska this year. A new totem pole honoring missing and murdered Indigenous women will be raised in the Prince of Wales Island community of Klawak at the end of the month. A Prince of Wales domestic violence advocacy organization called Helping Ourselves Prevent Emergencies, or HOPE, is organizing the event. Tiffany Mills is the organization's executive director. She says HOPE wanted to call attention to how Native women and girls disappear and are murdered at rates higher than any other population. A study by the Urban Indian Health Institute found that 52 cases were reported in 2016.
And we really thought that the best way to do that would be to have a reminder that is going to be placed in an area where people pass by it every single day.
It'll be placed along Klawak's main road near the town's lumber mill. Mills says Heidelberg carver Tony Christensen has been carving the pole for the last 6 months.
One of the main characteristics is the representative hand over the mouth, which is really the symbol of missing and murdered Indigenous women of the movement.
She says the pole also recognizes Judy Lee Guthrie of Heidelberg.
We're going to have a plaque at the base of the pole that was approved by Judy Lee's parents. It's a bronze plaque, and it has a drawing from her memorial program, and it has her birth and death dates there.
The event is planned for 11 a.m. on July 31st. And finally, let's take a look at the National Weather Service forecast for the Juneau area. Forecast tonight, rain likely, lows around 50. Wednesday, rain, highs in the mid-50s. And that is it for the KTOO News Update for Tuesday, July 19th, 2022. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.